Welcome to the Never Settle podcast. My name is Mel Clark, and I am passionate about helping people realise that settling for second best is no longer an option, and that everyone deserves to live the life they truly desire. Hey, hey, hey. Today I had the pleasure of talking to Corbin Elliott. Corbin is only young. He was 24 when we did this interview. I'm not sure if he's older now, but Corbin, when he left college, he had absolutely no idea what he wanted to be, who he wanted to be, like a lot of the young generation. Well, I was the same as well when I was finishing university. He did a music degree. He's a singer like me, but he suffered really bad anxiety, quite debilitating at times. And as a result of that, he was forced to develop life systems to stabilize himself. And as a result of that, he has now created his own media company that revolves around that. So he's the founder of personal development media company, Peace and Purpose. He's also the author of Career Clarity book, Unconventional, Anxious to Alive. And he's got his own podcast show called the Peace and Purpose Podcast. So you'll love this conversation. Corbin's a real inspiration, especially for the younger generation. So enjoy. Well, hello, lovely listeners. Today I get to chat to the wonderful Corbin Elliott. Corbin has his own podcast show called the Peace and Purpose Podcast, which is a great name. Corbin has also written a book called Unconventional, Anxious to Alive. And Corbin's only young. How old are you, Corbin?
I'm 24.
24, just an absolute baby. But he's very passionate about helping young adults, showing them how to get clear on exactly who they are and what they want. And there are also tools that you can give them as well. And you call it life design. And it works because decisions get really easy when people get completely clear about who they are and what they want. And I completely, completely agree with that. I'm a life purpose coach myself, and the work that I take people through is really understanding to the core of who they are and how they've evolved as that. And when you know that, then you know the vision of what your future, you know, what you actually want your future to be, not falling into a career that sort of pays the bills and all the rest of it. It's life-changing. If you can live from purpose and live from who you actually are, then you're going to be such a much happier person. So welcome, Corbin. It's a pleasure to have you. I can't wait for the listeners to hear more about you.
Well, thanks for having me, Mel. Yeah, you're right. I'm totally passionate about this thing. I think the reason I'm so passionate about it is because, you know, my experience, I guess, being a young person trying to figure out what I want, why I want it, all of those different things. I'm certainly passionate about it. So a little bit about me. I'll just give you a starter pack on myself. So I came up, I was always a performer, I was a musician, a singer more specifically, and I did this all through high school. Do what?
Me too, I'm a singer as well.
I got you. So anyway, I did this all through high school. I did it, continued to pursue it in college. I mean, it was going very well. I was touring internationally, like things were looking up.
Nice.
But the problem was, before we start nice and too much here, is that I got to a point in college where I didn't have the fortitude to stick with what I knew I wanted to do, which was music. I think a lot of the things that, you know, come in, they say, you know, it's impractical, or it's not as safe, or it's all these different things regardless. And whether those voices were loud or quiet, in my head, I was building them up to really be something. And as a result, I took a left-hand turn, like a 365-degree turn, and I started pursuing things that were more practical in my mind. This is what I've discovered after the fact. So I was like, I'm going to be a personal trainer, work at the gym, I'm going to be a doctor. These are all things that I'm continuing to change from in my course of study. to be a doctor, to start a business, be an entrepreneur, to a doctor, and then finally back to music. And the reason that all this evolution happened is, or at least from doctor on, I started to really follow my passion again, because I got to a turning point where I was very anxious, and I think the anxiety came from the fact that I knew that I didn't want to do what I was doing, but I was doing it anyway, and I didn't want to admit it to myself, because of all the, you know, it wasn't safe and all these things. And it's like, if I had to admit it to myself, I would then have to face it and have to do something about it. But I didn't want to do that, so it got to the point where, I mean, I was getting pent up, so it was anxious mind and then slowly anxious body, so I had the psychosomatic symptoms of anxiety. So had back tension, chest tension, and then slowly got, like, I started having muscle spasms. It was terrible at one point. I spent a whole week in bed. Like, it was nasty. I couldn't get up, and I couldn't even leave the bed physically for a week. And this was at probably 22 going on 23, probably somewhere in between there. And I'm like, I'm 22. I can't even get up and go to the bathroom on my own. Like, something's wrong here. At that point, I sort of didn't, my body didn't give me an option but to change paths. So I turned back around, sort of have slowly navigated my way back out, and now I'm doing the things that I think I'll be happy of whenever I'm 80, as opposed to the things that I'll be able to tell people at a cocktail party. So that's a little bit about me.
So did you go to college and get your degree and all of that?
I did, yeah. So I came out, surprisingly, with a vocal performance degree. So I did end up graduating with that. Had a minor in entrepreneurship, which actually still helps me because there's a lot of elements in that with what I do now. And I took a bunch of pre-med classes, but there's no degree for that. So,
so, you said you toured internationally with the singing. So what sort of music are you into? What sort of singing do you do?
So what I did internationally was varied. So I do anything from classical to literally the poppiest pop music you've ever heard. I did some time in Costa Rica. So they have like these cultural centers down there. And they don't do much musical theater, but we essentially brought like a cabaret show of like a mix of musical theater and, performed at a bunch of cultural centers in Costa Rica. That was super fun. Mm. I was mainly in Europe, which is where there was like some spiritual, some gospel music, some more contemporary music too over there, but doing that for tours. I sang at the Vatican one year. That was great. Super cool. Nice. At a mass. And that was gospel spiritual music. There's a Institute of Music that's actually an American Institute of Music, but it's the most prolific one in Europe. And I sang with them as well. So that was classical, but also more jazz, all the different styles, essentially. So I've done a lot of different genres.
And are you still singing now, or is it more of a sideline?
Frontline again. Like I said, you know, it's been the continuation of me figuring out what I wanted to do. So post-college, I've slowly fell back into it. So, like, I'm teaching voice lessons now again. I am actually auditioning currently to go on cruise ships and be a contractor for cruise ships to perform on cruise ships. So I'm doing things. It's really becoming the front line, especially with the voice lessons and those contracts. So yeah, it's actually turning back into that again. So yeah, that's actually my main hustle now. Surprise.
Oh, okay. So why cruise liners? Is it because you get to travel as well, or is it what makes you want to go on those?
Yeah, get to travel a lot. I found that I grew up a lot when I traveled. So that's a cool part. Second part is, unlike anything that you do on land, One, your salary, which is not uncommon on land if you're in a show for a while. But the second part is they pay for all of your living expenses, and then you have a salary. So that's great as a guy getting on his feet, essentially, with this stuff. But, yeah, I get to travel, meeting new people. I'm looking for an adventure. I'm 24. I'm single. I'm ready to go out and do my thing. That's my where my head's at with that.
Yeah, don't blame you. Bloody hell. I wish I'd done that, but yeah. So in terms of you were bedbound for a week and your body was doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things and painful by the sounds of it. So what happened after that, you know, in terms of you were able to get mobile again, and obviously the anxiety had sort of reached an unbearable level by the sounds of it. What sort of happened next? And I guess this experience was what sort of made the podcast and the book arrive. Talk us through how you went from being bedbound to getting to where you've got to.
Sure. Yeah. No, the podcast, the book, everything I've done in this realm is in response to my experience with that. So how I walked my way out, I think that's one, in the bed, it's taking the realization and I think admitting to myself a little bit that I knew what I needed to be doing and I wasn't doing it. I think I sort of had a come to Corbin meeting in the bed there. And moving out of that, it was a matter of figuring out, okay, what do I want? Like what do I really want realistically with my life, especially right at this point? But long term, and what do I need to do now to where that sets that up? And that's difficult because I had a very clear path. I knew what I was doing initially. You know, throughout my entire life up until, I guess it was coming on my junior year of college, going into my junior year, I had always knew what I wanted to do. I was going to be a musician. That was what was going to happen. And then for there to be such a sociological element that would knock me off that path, I knew that it was going to be very difficult to find what I wanted to do again from there, since I wasn't on that hard charging path forward. So what I really did is just little, and I shared these with people, little exercises to figure out again what actually made me happy during the day, what things would bring me joy, and then sort of reverse engineering my life to where I can make the time that I spend in joy more than not, more than mundane things. So that's how I sort of navigated out of that after that bedridden moment of difficulty. So yeah.
So you basically had a lot of time to reflect and have some divine inspiration almost. So when you got mobile again, how just talk us through how it actually looked in terms of 1 minute you're feeling overwhelmed and, you know, you're realizing you're not exactly following the path that maybe you should be following or you truly want to follow. Why a podcast and then why a book? You know, how did all of it that sort of come to you?
Yeah. Well, it was slow. Everything was happening like in slow motion. This was not a quick process. It was very much, all right, how do I get through today and sort of be at some level of peace with myself? And especially right out of the bed, it was very much like, all right, I got into meditation, I got into journaling, I got into all these things that I use now to orient myself. And it was very slow. The podcast came about from just me going, okay, because I had a friend actually started it with another guy. And, you know, we started out of the premise of we're talking about stuff that is not generally talked about among young people. Generally, it's a lot of surface-level conversation, even among friends. Generally, a lot of surface-level, who's doing what, did they get married, whatever going on in young people. So the podcast was started out of the premise of talking about the ugly side or the challenging side of being a young person and sort of getting that message out there to more people, because if I had that, you know, if I had a presence like I guess I'm having on the internet now, if I had a list, if I was listening to someone like myself, I would have done a lot better through that time period of I really feel terrible. How am I going to get out of this? So that's really why I started the podcast, when I was on the up and up out of that. And that's why I started it, to be that guy who could be the voice of, hey, it's going to be okay. I know you can't see over this mountain right now, because, you know, that seems to be what happens in life, but here I am. I'm living proof that you can sort of succumb it or overcome it.
So why do you think, it's interesting, because I've got a 22-year-old son, and he's suffered with anxiety on and off, I would say, probably since he was about 16, 17, maybe. Now, it doesn't, not to the level where it debilitates him, because he's recently moved off up to Manchester, which is a different city to where we live. He's living in the city life in an apartment, sharing it with his buddy, you know, and that's something he always wanted to do. Good on him. But I think the last couple of years, I mean, he works for Google as well. And that was something, you know, he never went to university. It wasn't something that he wanted to do. And I always say with Jake, he will fall in shit and come up smelling of roses, because he's so chilled. Things just seem to happen, you know? And I think because he's had that experience a lot, when stuff gets a bit tough, it hits him harder than maybe somebody like myself. I've had to work hard and hustle ever since I was a kid. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I'm interested to know your perspective on why so many more younger people seem to be suffering with things like anxiety and depression and, you know, suicides in university especially seem to be higher. And I know suicide as a rule has increased through the pandemic for lots of different people, not just the young people. But yeah, just keen to know what your perspective is from a young lad, you know, growing up in, whereabouts in America are you?
I'm, if you throw it, so the, I'm in the state of North Carolina, and if you throw a dart at North Carolina, I'm the bullseye. So that's the best way I like to explain it to people.
Cool, right.
So anxiety, it's very interesting, and why, the question of why it happens more, or it seems to happen more now, I don't know. I don't know if whether it's a reporting thing. I'm just spitballing here. It could be a reporting thing as far as, you know, we didn't look for it as much, or we didn't have the name anxiety, you know, in the 80s or the 70s, or, you know, sometime before the current day. As I know, that happens a lot in medicine as far as, oh, this is this thing we now look for, or, and then, you know, even in the medical community, even if it isn't something that's diagnosed, then that gets on the internet and people have access to it now. And they can say, "Oh, I have anxiety. That's what I'm feeling right now," or whatever. So I think that could be a component. I think also a component. There's a, and I don't, this has probably been here for forever, but there's always a pressure to be someone, I guess, as opposed to we're all gaming for status, which maybe that's a part of happiness, but I think we're all gaming for status more than we are for being happy. And I think that is a problem. And anxiety, whenever we fall short of being this thing that we're supposed to be, then I think we get anxious, because then we're like, oh, okay, maybe I'm not worth anything, and people aren't going to like me, or all these different things. Because especially as young people, we really care about what people think of us, generally. I've sort of been ironing that out of myself, but it's built in. Because it matters, you know, from an evolutionary standpoint, it matters that we are accepted by people. So I think a big component of it is, it's like there are these archetypes now that we we want to be one of those things, and if we're not one of those things, then we're less than, and people really don't want to be less than in the eyes of others, especially their peer group. So I think anxiety runs rampant whenever we don't, you know, if you're not a CEO or if you're not some famous thing or if you're not the hit in the culture, it makes you feel less than, and then you feel like that'll, just from an old brain standpoint, if we don't fit in socially, bad things tend to happen to us. So I think a lot of it's not a coincidence that in the teenage years, anxiety is really rampant. It happens again in young adulthood because you're really navigating what the rest of your life's going to look like. But as a teenager, that's the first time that you're really noticing how important the peer group is. I mean, you can notice it younger, but this is the heart of it. There's no coincidence that's when anxiety peaks. So yeah, that's a little bit of my take on it, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. I remember, by the way, I don't know if you want to switch your video off because you've frozen and there was a bit of lag.
Yeah, that sounds good.
It's all right. Corbin's just having some Wi-Fi issues today. So, yeah, I mean, the teenager thing for sure, you know, we all feel like that. The hormones are running riot and it's affecting the way we think about things and feel things and all of that. And all of a sudden, you know, you're questioning everything. You go from being a child to this teenager and you're like, Jesus Christ, what the hell's going on? You know, I remember I got it into my head that I was adopted. I'm not adopted. I'm one of four kids. You know, we were not adopted, but you know, it's just crazy stuff that goes through your head in those years. But I don't know. It seems to me, and maybe it's because I'm too far away from it now, but it seems to me that the younger generation, certainly people your age, seem to be suffering more with stress and anxiety than I remember it being when I was that age. But I like what you said, you know, there are more, these labels are more readily available and slapped on things so quickly, you know, and then all of a sudden everybody's got depression or everybody's got anxiety. And it's like, I hate labels, you know, everybody's different. And just because you're feeling down one day does not mean you've got depression. So yeah. Right. So when you, what was it that was creating that for you? Do you know? Was it just the fact that you were like, oh, I'm on the wrong path and I should be on this path and people have told me this path isn't going to work and I was going to do this and I was going to do that? Was it that whole sort of confusion of what you should or shouldn't be doing that sort of got you into that state, do you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the component that runs parallel to that of, I expect a lot from myself. And I think the continuous cycle of starting over in a different thing makes me feel like I'm progressing less. I'm just sort of casting my net very wide. And I think that was probably provoking some level of stress on me as well. So I think that's a part of it that runs parallel. Yeah. Also just some, I don't know, probably just the culture of it got worse whenever I graduated. So I think also the stress of being a post-grad, but you're basically taking that and multiplying it by the two things that I mentioned before. So I'd say a really intense case of being unclear. And I think being unclear is probably the most stress-provoking thing ever because it's the future is extremely uncertain at that point, to the point to a fault. Like sometimes that can be great and it's exciting, what's going to happen? But this, it just got, my brain could not predict what was going to happen next. And I think that was a big piece.
Do you think also, because what you've just said there has reminded me about a couple of things. So one of previous podcast guest, she said that when being spat out at the other end of university, when up until that point you're in structures and establishments and you know what you're doing and you're revising for your A levels and then you're doing your degree and then maybe you'll do a postgrad or whatever, you've got a structure and you know what you're doing day to day and you've got a timetable. When you get spat out at the other end, all of a sudden you've got all of this, oh, right, now what? You know, and there is that pressure of, I should know what I want to do by now. And of course, most people don't. But it, also a friend of mine who was in the military had the same thing, because when you're in the military, it's all structured, you know, you're given your accommodation, you've got your team, you might be the officer in charge, but there's a structure. And then all of a sudden, when you decide to leave the military for whatever reason, you're out in civvy land, as they call it, and there is no structure. And all of a sudden, you've got to think for yourself and start trying to understand what it is you do want to do with your life outside of that structure. So do you think there's an element of truth in that?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think, yeah, you're sort of on your own to make guiding decisions, to make the executive decisions. Well, in college, yeah, sure, you do that. You know, like you're making decisions, the ideas in preparation for you to make career choices later on, and, you know, relationship choices and all these other things that are going on in college. So sure, you're making decisions, but the structure, like you mentioned, it alters. It drops out and says goodbye. You know, especially whenever you've been in school your entire life. So I think so. I think you make a great point to that. And that part of the process is figuring out how to create your own structure in life, or how you're going to manage yourself and all these other things, which is a big part of it. And one thing that really helped me was accepting, and I think coming to terms with, the fact that it just takes time, and sometimes processes are just a little painful and a little uncomfortable, and being able to work with that under the premise of, hey, I know it's really rough right now, but there's a timeline here, and at the end of the timeline, things are going to resolve themselves. So I think having that as your shining light in a situation where you're really trying to adjust is helpful.
Yeah, you just said something that makes perfect sense. You've just said something that made me think. We all know that life, certainly over the last 5 years, has got worse. It's that instant gratification with anything, whether it be the TikTok video, whether it be Amazon delivered tomorrow or even delivered today. It's that instant gratification that my age, we've come to get used to, and I will use those services as and when I need to myself. But for somebody your age, it's kind of, you know, like the internet and computers wasn't really a thing when I was a kid. I had my first mobile phone at the age of 23. And my son had a mobile phone at the age of 9, which I didn't want to do, but I did because everybody else was doing it, you know.
Right.
And it's crazy because you've become so reliant on these damn things from such a young age. Whereas, you know, for me, I didn't even have a television in my room until I was 18, you know. So it's a whole different ball game. So this instant gratification that you, as your generation, are just used to, it's just how life's been. When you are not able to give yourself instant gratification for whatever that career choice might be, or you're looking for that happiness or that fulfillment, and 9 times out of 10, we're all looking in the wrong places, because that flash car, it might make you feel better and make you feel good for a month at the most. And then at that point, you realize nobody else gives a shit that you're driving that flash car, and it gets you from A to B. And yeah, it's a nice ride and it looks great, but I still feel like shit on the inside. So, you know, looking for those externals to give you that pleasure is very, very short lived. And because we're on in this instant gratification model, for want of a better phrase, when you're not getting that personally, individually, you know, why am I not in this £100,000 job straight from university, you know? And it's because that's what you see on social media, all this fakeness, people are putting on how amazing their lives are through photographs that probably aren't genuine in lots of cases. So I just wanted to pick up on that. You mentioned about the instant thing, and I thought, yeah, you know, for your generation, that's what you've grown up being used to. And when things aren't instant for you personally, then it's going to hit harder than it would for somebody like me.
Right, right. No, I think I can see the culture there, the underlying culture. And I'm also just noticing, even with the instantness of things, like, what things, I'm really curious about this too, like, what things really make people feel good, like, sustainably? Like that's the biggest interest for me in my life, because I really see that as being, as the game we're all playing. It's the, do we have positive feelings more, or do we have negative feelings more? Like, and what, how can we bring about sustainable positive feelings? Like, I think if we can crack that code, then we're about to take a victory lap, because it's pretty nice.
I think if you can crack that code, you're probably going to be relabeled as God.
That's fair. That's fair. But, you know, and that's why I spend a lot of my time looking at, here's an exercise I did to get myself, you know, reorient myself. I call it the joy journal. And it's something you do. I did it every day for 30 days. I don't walk people into that. But essentially, at the end of the day, I write down the parts of my day that genuinely made me feel good or made me the happiest. And I write down those parts of the day. And then I do that for 30 days. And then at the end of the 30 days, I'll go back and read through the journals, and I'll look for patterns. So that's really my personal case study of where happiness comes from, at least for me. And that's what I suggest people doing, because we're really taking the guesswork out of it. It's like, okay, this made me happy. This didn't make me happy. Let's try to do more happy stuff. Yeah. It keeps it from, it's like a guess and check game, and it's more reliable, I think, than sort of playing the, oh, this sounds nice thing. It's a little bit more fundamental and practical.
Yeah. I totally get that. You know, the journaling side of things is something I wish I did more. I've done it from time to time. Used to keep a gratitude journal, that sort of thing. The Secret, I don't know if you've ever read it or seen the DVD, but that came out, crikey, 12, 13 years ago, maybe a bit more, somewhere around there. And even though that for me is now quite basic in terms of like the law of attraction and all the rest of it, I'm a very spiritual person, it opened it up to the masses. And I've seen a massive change in the last 10 years in terms of just the language people are saying. You know, most people now are talking about the universe. That didn't happen, you know, 5-10 years ago. A lot of people are talking about, you know, being able to attract the right things to them. That kind of language wasn't around either. So I don't know if you've looked at The Secret or read The Secret, but if you haven't, it's worth some of your time. And in terms of the big misconception, I think, is you've got to find happiness. You've got to find your inner happiness. Well, you don't have to find it. It's there.
Right.
And it's also, what does happiness mean? Well, happiness doesn't have to mean, like, you know, shoulder shaking laughter 24 hours a day. That is not happiness. Happiness is being content, is being okay with where you are at right now, because it might not be where you've seen your mate on social media. It might not be the movie that you watched last night where, you know, everything was just unbelievable and the guy was a millionaire by the age of 25 or whatever. That is, you know, everybody's life is different. We're all on this planet to do our own journey. And my belief is that journey is to evolve and have an impact on your immediate environment and immediate people. And they have an impact, and they have an impact, and so on and so on. Have you heard of the butterfly effect?
Yes, yeah. Very familiar.
Cool. So in terms of everybody's at whatever level they're at, and nothing's right and nothing's wrong, where we all get so pissed off, depressed, suicidal, and all the rest of it is because we're not where we think we should be. You know, we've been a disappointment. We didn't take the path our parents wanted for us. We ended up, you know, in trouble along the way. We took wrong decisions. Well, all of that, even though it's not the golden, oh yes, this is what I want, you know, and guess what? There is no destination. Your journey is going to change all the time. If we can be happy with where we're at right now, and by the way, I'm guilty, massively guilty of what I'm talking about, which is why I talk about it with such passion. I was going to be a millionaire by the time I was 30. Didn't happen. You know, so I totally get it. I've always been very ambitious. And I lost my dad in 2006, and that really catapulted my spiritual journey. And along the way, you know, I've come to certain realizations. And one of them is you've got to be okay with where you're at. Even if the bank balance is crap and all the rest of it, it doesn't matter, because what matters is how you're growing as a person, how you're evolving, how your consciousness is evolving, what impact you're having on the people around you. You want it to be positive. You don't want it to be negative. You want to be empowering people. You want to be uplifting people. You don't want to be drowning in your own self-pity for not having achieved that 100,000 this year or whatever it might be. And that is easier said than done. Massively, because society around us is telling us the complete opposite.
Right.
But if you can step away from what society is telling you you should or shouldn't be doing, and you can stand strong in who you are as a person. And Corbin, I mean, I can't see you at the moment, which is a bit frustrating for me, because I love to converse, you know, over video.
Yes, same.
Yeah. but I can already tell, you know, at such a young age, the man that you're becoming anyway, in terms of it isn't about the quick fix. You're looking for more than that. You're looking for purpose. You want that inner joy, regardless of what car you drive or what house you live in or whatever. And being a singer, obviously that gives you a lot of joy and the creativity, and that is coming from you. That is you. Anyway, I've waffled on. I just felt the need to share because you're a similar age to my son as well. And my son, as much as he likes to take the piss out of me at times, he does value, you know, what I have to say. So over to you.
Yeah. And that's a fun thing, I think, about being on other people's podcasts, though. You get to hear a lot of perspective. I think perspective's gold, you know, regardless of, you know, who the person is or where they're from or anything. But I can definitely see that the tendency. That's the curious part about it, because even as a person like myself, who I appreciate you saying those things, you know, about, you know, just something sustainable and not the quick fix and all this stuff. The tendency, though, you know, if I'm not paying attention, that there tends at some point there's a reversion back to, okay, these things, you know, that. And I'm really curious about that tendency, why it's there, or, you know, whether it's all society telling us, or whether it's a human tendency that isn't, you know, because our brain isn't designed to make us happy. Our brain's designed to help us survive at the end of the day. Yeah. So I'm like, you know, I'm really curious, and believe me, everybody will know if I crack the code on this guy, because if I can figure out the tendency on this, that's going to be huge, because that's the thing. Even if you have the mindset that I do about these, and I think about things a little bit differently than a lot of young people, but even I have the tendency to fall back into it. So I'm like, if I can crack that code for people, I'll be excited. There's a fallback into the status update world, I would say, regardless of whether you're literally doing that on social media or in your mind of, oh man, look at me, I'm I'm significant or I matter. I think we all want that, reverting back to that. But I think we need to alter the definition of what matters. Like, you don't have to be the CEO of some company to matter, or you don't have to be anything. You could just be a mom and matter, you know, as opposed to doing all these other things and redefining that. So yeah, I know, I appreciate your perspective though.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you know, this, you know, what you're searching for, it will come with experience and it will come with new opportunities. We can't figure it all out at the age of 17 or 24 or 30, or we still haven't figured it out probably by the time we get to 80. However, we will have figured out a lot more by the time we've got to 80, and hopefully we will be more content in our own skin and put what's really important as a priority, as opposed to, you know, you've probably heard it yourself, the people that are on their deathbeds are not saying, I wish I spent more time in the office. They're saying, they're saying the complete opposite. And if we can take that perspective in our everyday life, so many people beat themselves up about not working hard enough, or they need to be in the office, they need to be the last one in the office, they need this, they need to do this, they need to do that, to prove that they're working hard, to prove that they are valued. And again, it's all the external stuff. You don't get to knowing how can I put it? You don't get to being strong in who you are generally in your 20s, because there's still a lot of learning. There's still a lot of new experiences, new people, weird people, great people. You know, you're going to get on this cruise ship and your world's going to change again. You know, you're going to meet all of these weird and wonderful people. You're going to see all these amazing places. And each one of those things is going to change you forever, whether it be in a big way or a small way. So that is going to continually evolve throughout your life. And so I get why you want to find these tendencies, but it's different for everybody, because, you know, somebody, if you said to somebody, another 24-year-old, oh, go on the cruise ships and be an entertainer, that would be horrific, you know, because everybody's so different, right?
Right.
And you can only get your perspective, and it is only your perspective, and it is only my perspective from my experiences, which are completely different to everybody else's. And even if I had the same experience with a mate, and we lived the same thing, her or his perspective is going to be wildly different to mine. And we lived the same experience.
Right.
So, do you know what I mean? So it's...
Yeah. No, a compilation of their other experiences helps to...
Change
the lens at which they look at things through. Yeah, no, I completely with you. I think I'm really curious about the more fundamental things of what people... tend to make people happy, if that makes sense. Like you know, I understand there's idiosyncrasies between people, but like, you know, a relationship where you can talk about things with your partner. I'm like, you know, I'm really curious about noticing patterns, but within myself, and then sort of feeding back. Here's how I relate and what my podcast's about. I give people tools to figure out themselves as opposed to telling them who they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I definitely concur in that department. But yeah, no, actually, that's very funny that you say that, because I actually had a friend who I was like, hey, because he's an actor, and I was like, hey, you want to do this cruise ship thing with me? And he was like, no, not at all. So it's completely will feed into that example.
Yeah, there you go. So when did you, so this book that you've written, remind us what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Unconventional Anxious to Alive. And that's based off of the idea that I have a very different approach than pretty much everybody else I know. That's why I call it unconventional. And that approach developed from on the recovery process of me being less anxious, essentially. And I sort of share the the tools that I used in the book to, I guess, formulate that approach. So that's what it's about, navigating out of anxiety back into, oh, I'm actually feeling good again. So that's the premise of the book.
And how can people get hold of it?
It's on Amazon, so that's really the best place to find it, as, you know, a lot of things are on Amazon now, but that's the place, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Corbin, it's been lovely to chat with you, even though we're not on video right now, but I'm always intrigued, especially by the younger generation, and obviously I've got an affinity to younger guys in as much as Jake's 22, and I see the journey that he's been on. I'm always intrigued to see how young people evolve, adapt, how they want to live their life. So it's been a real interesting hour for me to just listen to your perspective. And as I said to you earlier, you know, it's, I guess, maybe hitting rock bottom in terms of not being able to leave your bed for a week is a massive deal at a young age. But you could have, like, gone, you know, you could have cried the whole time, gone, woe is me, woe is me. But what you actually did was you had perspective. You gave yourself that space to think about things differently and maybe take divine inspiration. And then you wanted to help other people. You wanted to serve other people. And I meant to say this earlier, and it's obviously now coming up now for the right reasons. In terms of that inner happiness, that inner whatever that we're all wanting to have all the time, when you serve others and help other people, that's it.
Yeah, no, that's what I've found. Anything, even with my goals, the way I frame things, whether it's music, or it's the podcast or whatever I'm doing, it is always framed in as far as what I want my people say. What do you want your legacy to be, or, you know, what do you want people to say about you? I guess it's framed in that manner. It's essentially helping people to have a positive experience through whatever talent or skill it is of my own. So I definitely relate with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you're going to continue to want to serve and help. And I mean, you'll be doing that with the cruise ship stuff because people love to be entertained, right? And it's an opportunity.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, and it's an opportunity for you to be able to express yourself in that way. But I can see you probably ending up being a coach at some point. I'm just going to put that out there.
throw that out into the universe.
So if people want to find out more about Corbin, where's the best place for them to go?
The best place, if you search the Peace and Purpose podcast anywhere, yeah. Really, like if you just Google it, I think we're the whole front page, or at least 99% of it. So if you look there, that's what it is, the Peace and Purpose podcast. We're freshly on YouTube, so I've been trying my hand at videography. But it's the podcast, but there are visual elements to it. So I've got, you get to see my lovely face, as you couldn't for the whole podcast on this. You get to see my lovely face. There's some B-roll that really illustrates what I'm talking about, I guess, more, but then there's also the audio version. So if you look up the Peace and Purpose podcast, we're that.
Perfect. And I always like to close these interviews down with, anything you feel called to share with the listeners, any pearls of wisdom, anything at all?
Yeah, I would just say, if you're in a bad place, or, you know, you're not feeling, you know, well, or things have been tough in your life, I think, and this is difficult, but the patience, if you have patience, it does get better. There is a good part of this, and even as a young guy, and I now understand the context of a valley. And I think if you can understand, even if you haven't been through a big valley yet, or if you have, that you can't, when you're at the bottom, it's hard to see, and things are unclear about whether it's going to get better or not. But you can, even if you haven't been through one, you can take the context of me. That it does get better. I'm telling you, the worst valley of my life over probably a 3 or 4 year period, And I'm starting to come out of it. So just having the patience and fortitude, if you can do that, things do get better. That would be my ending comment.
Very, very sage advice. Thank you. Thank you, Corbin. It's been a pleasure to meet you and listen to some of your story. It's only just beginning. I'm sure you're going to do amazing things. But thank you. And I know the listeners will have loved this too.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Mel.
You're very welcome.
If you enjoyed that conversation or were inspired in any way, please, please leave me a review on iTunes. It's the best way for other people to find my podcast and be inspired themselves. Well, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, and perhaps the story resonated with your own life or reminded you that perhaps you're also settling for second best. I've been helping people from a young age and realising that there is more to life than what they are currently settling for. My desire is to give others the love to confidently and respectfully know their value so that they feel joy and are empowered to make a fulfilling difference. If that sounds good to you and you'd like to reach out and connect, you can find me at facebook.com/MelClarkCoaching, that's Clark with an E, or instagram.com/MelClarkCoaching. Enjoy your day.